Thought for today. I am secretly glad my parents were strict with me. Love. I am secretly glad that my parents were strict with me. I am secretly glad my parents were strict with me. I've been discussing this now with John for the last, 3,700 years. And every year he says the same thing. He is secretly glad that his parents were strict with him. Because what his parents expected of him was that he be the very finest being on the face of the earth. He didn't have to be a human being. He just had to be the finest being on the face of the earth. And this was very difficult for John at first, because John wanted to be like the other boys. He wanted to be like the other girls. And he would go out and play with the other boys and girls, and they would do all sorts of interesting things. And John would always stop and think, what would mother say if I did this? What would mother say if I did that? What would my dad say if I did this? What would my dad say if I did that? Well, he constantly had these thoughts going through his mind. And then, when John was 3 years old, he stopped having those thoughts. And he started having a new set of thoughts. And his new set of thoughts were like this. What would I think of me if I did that? What would I think of me if I said that, if I acted in that way? What would I think? At 3 years old, we're so amazed at Mozart playing the violin at three, writing music at three. Well, you see, the brain is quite capable of all these wonderful things. When our parents are strict with us, and they're strict with us in a very loving way, that strictness comes through as a diligence and a dedication and a determination and a discipline for us. It comes through as a very positive dynamic force for us. There's one thing in saying, no, you can't. And then there's another thing in saying, well, I wouldn't do that because if I did that, I wouldn't like myself for what I did. Or, do you think that you'd like to do that? Let's think about it. Now, you think that it's fun to run out into the street. And John says, yes, that's where the kids are playing. I want to go out and play with them. Well, you're just a little runt. And when you go running out in the street at your age, the other kids won't be paying any attention to you and will not be watching over you so that you don't get in the way of the cars, because the street is where the cars play, not where the people play, not where kids play, although kids think that the street is where they play. Now, if you want to go and play in the playground of the cars, well, then you better be a car yourself, because you have to be able to be seen, and little people just are not seen by the big cars on the street, so you want to just stay away from the street. But if you want to go on the street and get yourself bunged up, that's okay, because that's your choice. But if you want to stay here in the grass, if you want to stay in the park and play and have a good time, just think of how wonderful you're going to feel having a perfect body with no broken bones, having a mind that works crisp and clear, not having been joggled by a car ramming into it. You know, those are sort of negative attitudes about it, but John says, I'm secretly glad my parents were strict with me, because they were very strict with John. And you see, the only thing that John could do without going against what his parents said, which is what all the other kids were doing, John could only go up. And so up he went. He grew straight and tall, because there was no objection to that. And then, as he grew straight and tall, he grew in the order of what was beneficial for him. His mother and father were very strict with him, saying, John, is this beneficial for you? I'm sick and tired of hearing it's beneficial for me. I'd like to do something that's not beneficial for me once. Well, what would you like to do that's not beneficial? I'd like to eat a whole gallon of ice cream. All right, John. We'll buy a whole gallon of ice cream and we won't touch it. And it's just all yours. What flavor do you like? All of them. Okay, John, here it is. Neapolitan. It's got most of the flavors in it. Now, John sits down and eats the ice cream. And he doesn't really want to finish it. He eats maybe about a bowl full and he's done. But he has pledged himself to eat the whole thing. So he eats and he eats. Lunch goes by and he's still eating his ice cream. Dinner goes by and he's still eating his ice cream. He lies in his bed still eating his ice cream. By now it's quite melted. You know, it's more like drinking it than eating it. And so Mommy says, let me put it in the cooler for you and make it firm, then you can eat it. Oh, no, it's okay. It's easier to get down this way. Well, John, being a man of his word and now 4 years old, he eats the whole gallon of ice cream. And if you can imagine, a little boy with a big tummy, John had a big tummy. But, of course, he was tall for his age, too, because he had somewhere to go, straight up. John pledged to himself, never again would he be the first test to make sure that he could do whatever he wanted to do. Never again would he say to his parents, I want to do this, when they advise him not. He's going to take the advice of his parents. At 4.5 years old now, he has learned that he wants to do everything right. He said, I am not going to, like my father says, reinvent the wheel just because I got to reinvent the wheel. I may invent the wheel in a better way. In fact, you know, Mom, I've got an idea for the wheel. You see this gummy stuff I got on the bottom of my roller skates? That'd make wonderful wheels for cars. It'd have plenty of give, it'd have plenty of this. So Dad and Mom say, well, John, that sounds like a good idea. Go for it. So he calls up the president of Goodrich Rubber Company, and he says, you know, the next tire is going to be made out of this plastic they use on roller skate wheels. And the president of the company says, what's your name? My name is John Charles Dainty, sir. How old are you, John Charles? I'm 4.5. How'd you get my number? I know people in high places. At 4.5, you know people in high places? Oh, yes. Is there anything else you'd like to know, Mr. Goodrich Rubber Company? Oh, John, I'd like your address. Because when this thing proves itself one way or the other, I'd like to see that you get a royalty on the idea. Well, thank you very much, sir. So Goodrich Rubber Company is now in the process of developing that wheel. And soon cars throughout the country will have those wheels, which will never need air. They'll never have problems. They will give and take according to the road, and they will always have perfect traction. Sounds good, doesn't it? Be a little heavier than the tire with air in it, but the tires with air have so much steel and rubber on them that they're really quite heavy, too. So, and of course, the air doesn't weigh anything. Now, a month later, the president of the Goodrich Tire Company comes to visit John at his home. And his parents say, who's this impressive man coming to visit our son? And they say, well, could I speak to him? Yep, sure. So they all sit down in the living room, and the man says, John, we have decided to manufacture this gummy rubber that you told us about. Now, you didn't invent it, but you invented the idea. And ideas are just as important as the subject itself, the object itself. Because roller skates had them on already. But to put them on cars was an amazing, beautiful transition that only a child could think. And you say, sir, that was not the thought of a child. Oh, did you get it from somewhere else? Yes, I got it from God inside of me. Ooh, okay. So, see, John is already disciplined in this. I am secretly glad my parents were strict with me, because his parents were very strict with him. John would say, well, he made me do that. They'd say, John, no one can make you do anything unless you want to. He stole it from me. No one can steal anything from you unless you want to give it away. He killed that little bird. No one can kill anything unless they want to be killed. And you don't have to be a part of anything that you don't want to be a part of. So they were very strict with him. They were very strict with him on keeping his thought clear and keeping his mind clear and keeping his attitudes clear. And, of course, being a young millionaire at that age was quite an experience, because the tires just went gung-ho, and he received not only royalty from the Goodrich Company, but from every other company that started manufacturing it, because it was his idea and he had it patented. Say, that's a cool idea. So John put his parents through college. They always wanted to go through college. And John went to college himself, inside himself. But he has professed all of his life that he is secretly glad that his parents were strict with him, because they were strict with him on demanding the very best out of him, on demanding the idea that he go within himself and listen to that divine voice within himself, respond to that divine voice within himself, and live that divine voice within himself. Now, this is not easy for most children. Most children hear their parents say, I've got to do it myself. And most parents say before their children, now, when I was a kid, I did this. When I was a kid, and of course, nothing kills kids more than when parents say, when I was a kid, I did this, or you got to do that. But John's parents were very wise. And they spoke to him and they said, John, listen quietly now. Inside of you is the answer to every question you have. When you're in school and you're doing your examination, you just listen within yourself. Mom, I'm not in school yet. I'm only 4 and a half years old. Okay, John. But you are far more advanced than most of the children. So quite likely, you will go to school earlier and you will come out sooner too. Mom, if I can write the final exam in high school and take it, can I be excused from all the rest of the classes? And Mom says, well, John, that's a rather noble undertaking. But you see, you might be a little unhappy because you're different from the other boys and girls. They're struggling away to learn these things that you already know, because you've revealed to yourself who you are within. Well, John, be a little careful now. If you're too eager to do some of these things, they may backfire just a little bit. His father was very insistent on him being a little careful. And John says, Dad, you always told me to go for it. You always told me to listen within and believe what the divine in me says. Well, Dad, I'm not kidding you. The divine in me has said this to me. The divine in me has said that I can write the final exam for the seniors at the high school, and I can take that final exam and naturally pass it. But I know these things, Dad. You've told me these things. Yes, I know, son, and sometimes I wish I hadn't done it, because you're missing your childhood. Dad, what is a childhood? A childhood is an unremembered experience of our life where we move on into our adulthood. We move on into our mastery of who we are. And if every child were trained by you, Dad, they would move into their mastery a lot quicker. They'd move into their mastery at a very early age, and they wouldn't have to wait until they're 18 or 21. They wouldn't have to wait until they're over the hill. They could do it while they're still young and dynamic and full of wonderful ideas and are able to say all these wonderful ideas, regardless of the fact that people think that they're very foolish, that people think that those ideas would never work. And this is what entrepreneurs do. This is what geniuses do. Geniuses listen to the divine within. They listen to that divine within them. And as they listen to that divine within them and follow it, then they're successful. And Dad, this is what you have taught me to do. You've been very strict with me. And I know what the other kids are allowed to do, and I know what I'm not allowed to do. But I'm very glad that you're strict with me, because I can see the results. I can see the things happening in my life. Son, you're talking like an adult. You should have some time to be a child. But Dad, I don't know how to be a child. A child is someone who is learning, who is revealing the wonderful things that is within him. And I'm doing that. But I've learned the technique, and now I'm applying it in all areas of my life, and I'm having a good time. You see, a lot of times, parents are so strict with their children that then they see that the children themselves are so strict with themselves that they don't have a lot of fun by the standards of other children, and they think, what have I done to take away that fun for my children? What have I done to take away the opportunity for them to be children? Well, let's think about that. Who defines what a child should be? Well, most mothers and fathers define what a child should be. John comes running up to his mother and says, Mommy, what's sex? And Mommy says, John, not now. Later. Not now. And Sylvia comes up to her mommy. She says, Mommy, who crossed the road first? The chicken or the egg? What do you mean, who crossed the road first, the chicken or the egg? Well, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Well, Sylvia, the chicken, of course. And, okay, thank you, Mom. And then she goes around asking everybody else the same question, and she knows the answer. Now, can anyone tell me what the answer is, the chicken or the egg? Nobody's going to stick their foot in their mouth, huh? Okay. Well, if we go by the Bible, what came first? The chicken. If we go by nature, what came first?
The egg.
The egg. Because out of the egg came, out of the seed came all these things. And the world was littered with seeds. Seeds out of which all things grew forth. What is a seed? A seed is an idea. And out of the idea come all things. Could man create another human being just by putting the seed ideas out there? And some people call them the sperm and the egg. But by putting seed ideas out there, it doesn't have to be a sperm and an egg. It could be a thought. Because a thought is the seed idea. That's the real cause. Because before the seed and the egg get together, there are people who want the seed and the egg to get together. There are people who want to be procreative. They want to have reproduction of the species. They want these. Perhaps they don't know that. Perhaps they don't know it. Perhaps there's some intuitive, inner-driven drive that encourages them to do this. But who knows? We do, if we want to listen to it. But what does it matter? What do all these rhetorical questions matter to any of us? They don't need an answer. They're just academic and interesting. What are the only questions that, for our interests, need to have an answer? The only questions that we think of that need to have an answer are the questions of who are we? Where did we come from? Where are we going? What's our purpose in being here? Is your purpose for being here to write a book? Is your purpose for being here to be in a physical body? Is your purpose for being here to get married and have children? Is your purpose in being here to do all of these various things that we think that we're here for? And of course, the answer is no. Our purpose for being here is to be ourselves and have fun. Nothing more, nothing less. Just to be ourselves and have fun. If we're ourselves and having fun, then what does that mean? That means that everything we do is joyous. Now, John is secretly glad that his parents were strict with him, but John could be even more glad that his parents were strict with him because his parents were strict with him about the right things. Now, John, you eat that food. It's good for you. John, you wash the table because it's necessary to do that. John, you put your clothes away because it's necessary to do that. John, you go to school because it's necessary for you to do that. John, you do this because it's necessary. It's necessary. Now, if they told that to John. There are many kids who live because it's necessary. But what did John's parents say to him? John, what benefit will come from doing that? And John says, Well, I'd get the satisfaction of knocking the guy in the face. But what about when the guy comes back and knocks you back in the face? Well, that wouldn't be feeling too good. And what about when his brothers come and knock you back in the face? Well, I wouldn't create that happening. Well, why do you create them knocking you in the face in the first place? Or you knocking them in the face in the first place? Why create yourself fighting? Well, because that seems to be the thing that people like to do. They like to fight. They like to have wars. They like to have problems. They like to do all these things. Well, is that something you want to participate in? Do you want to shoot other people? Do you want to kill people? Do you want to tell other people how to live their lives and what's important for them to do? Well, no. Well, if you don't want to do that, then why are you participating in it? Why are you wanting to learn to be a fighter? Why do you want to learn the martial arts? Why do you want to learn all these things? And John says, well, that's a good question. Really, I just like to learn how to climb mountains. Well, John, why do you want to learn how to climb mountains? Because it'd be kind of fun. Well, isn't that kind of dangerous fun? Well, yes, it's dangerous fun if you think that there's a danger there. But if you think it's just fun, then there's no danger. Mom, how many times have people jumped out of the airplane with a bungee cord and had the bungee cord snap? I haven't heard of any. That's right, Mom. So the danger is in our minds and not in fact. Well, you're right, John. You see, when parents teach their children to think and to follow their thought and to listen to their thought and to dream their dreams and have imagination that just pours out of them into all the wonderful sacred bottles and sacred vehicles that are carrying magic, then the kid is just going to grow and expand and become something wonderful. But if the parents are always saying, now be careful, don't fall down and scratch yourself, don't get yourself dirty, don't do this, don't do that, what happens to the kid? He becomes totally the opposite. He will do everything his parents tell him not to do. This has happened in many families. Many families have been so piously righteous. You understand what that means? So piously righteous that they have made their kids impious and unrighteous. You can take homes of families that you know about, and the mother and father have been so sacrilegiously, really, so religiously right in everything they teach to their children, that the children who seem to be the most cooperative take a flip and say, huh, that can't be right. I'm going to walk on the other side of the street. I'm going to go contrary to what my parents told me. And for years, they live contrary to what their parents tell them. For years, they are very successful. For years, they have great money. But there's always one thing lacking in their life. Now, I will name it in two ways, but there's always something lacking in their life. As far as your thinking is concerned, it's generally there's no respect from the community. And because there's no respect from the community, you think that the community is stupid. But really, it's not respect from the community. It's no respect from yourself. When you do things that are contrary to your highest good, contrary to what you feel is beneficial for the world in which you live and which you created, then you lose respect for yourself. And the day comes when you lose respect for yourself, and then you start running. Then you start running and you're looking for ways to hide, ways to escape all of this attitude that you've had. You're looking for ways to not take responsibility. Well, that's good and well and good too. But be very careful. Just remember this. Remember this. You cannot be killed. That's hard to believe, but you cannot be killed. You can disappear. You can ascend. You can do lots of things. You can even leave your body behind. But your body is not you. It's merely what you have interpreted yourself to be while you were here. Well, Herb, then there is death. Your body dies. No. Your body is not life. Your body never was life. Life is you. Life is the spirit within you. It is the reality within you. It has nothing to do with that physical shell. Is your car life? You get in your car and you turn on the switch and you give it life. But even the kind of life you give it is very temporary. You smash up a car and you think nothing of having it repaired or getting a new car. But life is a beautiful thing. It stands separate from the car, from the body. It stands separate from the man, the woman, the child. It stands separate from the animal, mineral, or vegetable. It stands separate. And yet, it is one. Are you concerned that you're not ready to recognize that you are one with that tree in the front yard? Are you concerned that you're not one with the daffodils that are glowing out here in our garden? Or the pansies? Are you concerned that you're not one as the dog here? You are. You are, but you're not playing that game right now. Right now you're playing the game that you're separate. John's parents taught him he is one as all. And as he listens within, he tunes into the infinite divine and knows all things. That's what they said, didn't they, John? And John has lived this all of his life. Now, are we ready to live this? Are we ready to realize that we're glad that our parents were strict with us, and that our parents were strict with us on spiritual matters, on metaphysical matters, on things that matter? Are you glad? Well, you can be. But just think of the child whose parent directs that child's every thought to positive, uplifting things. Just think about that, you know? Just think about that. Well, what about their childhood? What about their playtime? You know these dogs? They would rather be with me 24 hours a day and have me do something with them 24 hours a day, giving them my total attention 24 hours a day, and they would like to live all of their life with me doing that. You say, well, wouldn't they rather be off on their own? No. Those are things that are instinctual things to do. The reality thing is they're my creation, and they want to be with me 100% of the time, if that's my choice too. You see it as dogs follow people around, and the people are not so attentive to the dog. But it's their master, and they follow it. Now, what is your master? Your master is yourself. Your master is your divine self. Your master is that in you that knows all things and is all things. Now, do you want a childhood? How long do you want your childhood to go on? Do you want your childhood to go on until you're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, and on? Do you want to continue going on playing the game of pretending that you don't know anything? That you don't know you're in charge of your life? Do you want to keep looking for rainbows? That's fine. That's what a human does. But the minute you step into your divinity, The minute you start walking your spiritual path, you no longer look for rainbows. You are the rainbow. You no longer look for snowstorms and blinding blizzards. You are that blinding blizzard and snowstorm. And you're having a ball. You are one as in and through that experience. And this is fantastic. Now, can you accept this? Can you realize this for yourself? Can you be this? This is a very important lesson that we're having today. It's a very important lesson. And if you want to have the benefit of this lesson today, I would think about it again and again and again. Because you say, well, I don't want to lose my childhood. I want to be able to go out and have girlfriends and boyfriends, and I want sex, and I want sailing, and I want skiing, and I want to follow my dream, and I want... No, you don't. No, you don't. You want one thing. You want to know that you're God. You want to know that you're the allness. You want to know that you're one. Then go and have a ball. Then go and do anything that is exciting to do or crazy to do. But do it knowing who you are. And when you do it knowing who you are, all the rightness or wrongness of it is gone. All the necessity or not necessity to do something is gone. There's no danger. The person who jumps out of the airplane with a parachute on has two opportunities. They can be scared silly or they can enjoy themselves fantastically. You know? Now, which one are you? Are you the human who is scared silly? Is that so thrilling, to be scared silly? Or is it thrilling to be one with the wind and dive through the sky and soar like a bird, and then when the time comes, pull the ripcord and gently fly down, maybe even with a paraglider, and zoom over the sky for an hour or more? Wow! To me, that's the essence. To going such a shit in your pants, scared, silly. I'm going to die. Well, there's no fun in that. It's a mess. The fun is when you know who you are and you enter into each little game, and you will, as a master, having a ball. Ellen says of the master she knows, she said, I can see the little smile on their face and the little attitude they have, that whatever comes, it's no big deal. It's all a part of how are we going to handle it? What's our attitude going to be? How are we doing things? Now, what's your attitude about it? Have fun. Have fun. You're worth it. Don't run from yourself. Run to the joy of living. Don't run from yourself. Run to the thrill of being who you are. Don't run from the parajump. Run to it with saying, wow, this is the greatest. And you can do it. And it's waiting for you right now. And I'm right there to work with you as long as you want it. I love you. Have a wonderful day.